Okay, yeah, it's very difficult to follow that in terms of... probably I can start tonight by what happened last night in the Shrine Room. Because I think it follows what Sarah's just been talking about. I sat on after the dedication ceremony, as we were invited to if we choose to, and I sat on for a while and slipped into open eye, just sitting meditation, and I just looked at that woodblock floor. Wow, I've sat here for hours, probably years when I lived here, for 4.5 years, plus all the other retreats. And something very, very positive welled up inside me. And I decided then I wanted to talk about living here. So it was something about something happens inside. It was a body memory, just looking at that floor while I was doing open eye, just sitting. I used to do that a lot at night. It was when I lived here, after a retreat or just when there wasn't a retreat on. That was my main practice. So a bit about Rivendell. It's not accidental, the name Rivendell. For those of you who know Tolkien, it's a house of refuge. And that name came... It was built as a rectory at the end of the 1800s. If there's outside, there's a plaque, there's a stone there. And it was built for the rector of that church there. But at some point, the church sold it off and Quakers bought it. And that's when it became Rivendell. I don't know how long the Quakers lived here. They eventually sold it to a couple that I used to know, lived somewhere over the fields. And they had a very wacky school here, all sorts of stories about that. And then in 86, the Croydon Buddhist Centre bought it. And Croydon still own it. I've got to say that. It's not independent. Croydon Buddhist Centre. And I'm going to also rejoice in ex-Padma Raja. Those of you who know a bit about tree Ratna, somehow Croydon has a funny reputation, and it's centred around Padma Raja, but he used some of the profits of Hockney's Vegetarian Restaurant, which was at the time the most prominent vegetarian restaurant in the whole of London.
What was that? Which one?
Hockney's.
Oh!
It was an art centre as well. There was very little Buddhism happening in Croydon in those days. But it paid for this place in 86. There is a story, it was going to be Padma Raja's weekend house, but that's another story. But it did very quickly become a Buddhist retreat centre, and a lot of the guys that worked at Hockney's came down here and moved, put central heating in and so on. There's two parts to this house. You are living in the rector's public part, and if you notice, the rooms, the ceilings are a lot bigger on this side. Once you go through that door in the kitchen, that's the servant's side.
Oh.
So in those days, the rector would have a gig and horses before motor cars, and the servants served, but they had a little private staircase that came down where those cupboards where the cereal bowls are, and that they were all taken out. So they had their own little tiny servant's staircase. And all those rooms on that side, if you notice where the bedrooms are now, the low ceilings, much smaller, and that's where the nursery would have been. So very different world. You can read about it in novels. So this is how that world was. And the Buddhists changed it, and they completely changed it. So it was used from 80, and the first retreat here was Sangharaksha ordaining two women, and the private ordinations were in that room next door where Jill is using, and the public, and then they were taken into the Shrine Room. So he privately ordained Dayanandi and somebody else, another Daya. And then they were led into the Shrine Room. It was only women, Dharmacharanis, that were on the retreat, but Sangharaksha at that time was ordaining women. So I think that's the first retreat that was held here. So they had some weekend retreats up till 1990. mostly for the Croydon Sanger. And then suddenly in 1990 it changed and they started doing more public retreats. And there were two or three guys living here. In 92, the retreat centre then had four men living here. Two Swedes and two New Zealanders. And in 93, Robert decided he wanted to move here. And I'd spent 3 months living in Bantra Loco as a guest in the autumn of 92. And then I lived as Karma Sheila's secretary at Bajakuta, the old study centre in Wales as well. I just got a really deep sense I wanted to live my rest of my life in a retreat centre. We know I'm not living in a retreat centre. Life's changed. But, and luckily, there was a guy who came to Bajakuta who I knew, and he was moving back to New Zealand, Torren Arthur. And he said, "Oh, there's a job. My job's going at Rivendell. Why don't you apply for it?" So I did. So I arrived in November 93. I moved. I tried a weekend retreat here, and it was perfect. I didn't know anybody in this part of the world. My friends and my ex-family were in Shrewsbury. So I upped, and I moved here in November. Now, I was the only English person. Kiwis speak English, but they're not English. And two Swedes, a very different culture. So, and some things started happening in Maria Naga's talk this morning. There was all sorts of triggers, which I'm now going to bring in. And that's, so the first one is about conditioning. He talked a lot about conditioning. So I was an Englishman amongst two Swedes and two New Zealanders, Kiwis, as I call them. But the significant conditioning was I'd been married for 25 years. I had daughters in their 20s. Torren Arthur, bless him, he had been married several times and he had daughters. But the none of the, and he went back to New Zealand after a few weeks. So, but the others had no experience and none of them had ever had a proper job. And I'd been a civil engineer for 25 years, so that was playing out in my conditioning. They couldn't understand me because they'd never had any experience of family life or a career. Something else Virinaga mentioned this morning was a guy called Vadika. I thought, I'm going to put Vadika in my talk tonight. I decided that this afternoon. So what was mentioned was the Buddha of Wall Street. Well, Vadika and I knew each other in Dundee in the 70s, both extreme left-wing social revolutionaries involved in the trade union movement. That's very much part of our, both our condition. We have conversations with each other that none of the rest of you wouldn't understand. But if you watch Vadika give a talk, you can see something about the very left social. You can see him, he's doing all the hand gestures of the socialist worker mob, which is what we were both involved in, just to get the story away. But yeah, so all these conditionings, whether it's family or jobs, and they all play out. And you've got to, yeah, I've said to Vadika, you're still on a platform doing this political speech. So, I did actually carry on doing some of my work here as an expert witness. I had some ongoing, by which time I was writing reports for a few years before I came here. And some of those cases, it was when people had road traffic accidents because of snow and ice or flooding. And some of them lasted 10 years, so I kept them going because I didn't want to let anybody down. So I was doing that, but so I came here, no friends. Within the first week I was here, and I was up in that single bedroom because there was nowhere else for me to live at that time, till Torren Arthur went. Every Tuesday afternoon we used to go up to Croydon, and it was Sangha nights in the evening. So I sat in the back. We had a big Volvo, which is Vanti's old Volvo. And one of the Swedes said to me in the back of the car, "Oh, who are you meeting in Croydon?" I said, "I've no plans. I don't know anybody. I'm just going up for Sangaring." And it sort of hit me, because they had all had dates. This is what happens in Tree Ratna or FWBO. You have dates and go for walks in twos, unless you're in India or Mexico. So I thought, oh, I don't know anybody here at all. And yeah, it was very painful, that realising I'd just gone up to the Sangha evening. And so that's important, that when we do make these steps, we have to look at where our friendships and our ties are. I had no contacts in my career world. I just walked away. I'd done civil engineering all over the UK, and I just walked away from all that. And all my friends in Shrewsbury, I'd walked away from those. So all my Buddhist friends are in Birmingham, where I started. So it was not an easy experience. And what compounded it, when Tara and Arthur went back to New Zealand, over there behind the kitchen, and that office wasn't there, that's behind the kitchen, there's just the community house. And in that, and that's where everybody, all the community lived. But Robert the Mitra had a corner downstairs where he had a futon that converted to a chair after he got up in the morning. And the other three guys had a spiral staircase. They came, the spiral staircase is still there, so they used to come down. So Robert the Mitra had to fold his futon and so on. I put up with that for 18 months. I thought, I've had enough of this. And that's when I moved into that room at the front. That room gave me peace, tranquil. And funny enough, we were talking tonight in a team meeting. Jill mentioned how much she's benefited from having a few minutes in that room. I spent hours just gazing out of the window of that room. I had it, it's very different now. It's got three beds in it, just my bed in it. Just gazing at those Scots pines that in the corner, when the wind starts, just watching those Scots pines. Spent hours looking at those and just watching them. That's the good part of living in a retreat centre and being able to meditate there in the shrine room. The bad part is retreat centres are very, very busy. And I brought a part of my conditioning, DIY, i.e. transforming houses that my family lived in. And the other three guys didn't do anything practical if they could avoid it, for various reasons. So he was doing it all because, oh, you're too busy. Carry on. Amrapuspa said, don't mention the solitary chalet, but I think I've got it. The reason I built that chalet, it was a kit, not completely a kit, but a mitra who died a long time ago gave £8,000 for that. And I had a men's team that we put all the services in from the back of the shrine. And the reason I built that is so women could have their first solitary retreat in safety. And that was a sole reason for it. Because there have been some incidents of women in the movement renting cottages, and they've been scared at night by intruders. And that was a soul, it was an order member who put me up to it, who didn't live here. So I thought, right, there's some safety, I can do this. And that's the sole reason for that. But it's created a lot of income. So just as I was finishing it in 95 in April, and the first person, the first woman who was not in the order anymore, she moved in for a 3-week, and that was the first retreat she had. I went off to Guhyaloka to be ordained in 95, and I was up in the mountains for 4 months. I nearly didn't come back from Guhyaloka. I was just absolutely wowed out by the mountains in Spain. And Yashodeva, who was now Adistana, he said, oh, He spotted another useful man, so he tried to persuade me to stay at Guyuloka. But what kept me, I did come back here, but what kept me here was loyalty. Gratitude, and loyalty to Rivendell. And now I was ordained. And somebody else tried to get me to move back to Vanjakuta, and again I stayed here out of loyalty. So I was now ordained. So what had changed? Well, not a lot. I had started the Tunbridge Wells class. What used to be a little class here, and when we had retreats, 1 week retreats here, the class couldn't take place, and they came from all sorts of parts of around here. So I moved the class out to the Friends Meeting House in Tunbridge Wells before I got ordained. And my community members reluctantly joined me. There'd been one change in the community. Unotra joined me from Brighton, and one Swede had gone, and one New Zealand had gone. So I was doing the Tunbridge Wells class, but I was still working like crazy, doing DIY. The Ponds came along after my ordination. So what the Ponds was a brilliant idea, which I read about them, so I managed to get some money towards those. So they would have been bigger, and we should have had a much bigger pond, but we couldn't afford it. So I was meditating for hours, but I was still doing a heck of a lot of work. And I was cooking. I did not want to lead, and I still do not want to lead retreats. I can happily give talks. I've never had any problem. I do not like being up front leading retreats. And the end of 97, led my first weekend retreat here on perception. And Gwen Hardy, who was a painter, came down, and she's now in New York. So she did a few things talking about perception from an artist's point of view. But it had an effect on my guts, and I started developing colitis, and it became worse over the Christmas of 97. And we had a guy on retreat who worked for the Canadian Embassy as a doctor, and I told him the symptoms. He said, "You better get to a specialist." He was fearing cancer, I think. It turned out to be colitis. So I'm thin, always been thin, but I lost a stone in about a month. That's how it came on. And Vijaya Sriblesser gave me some money to go and see a private consultant down in Eastbourne between Christmas and New Year in 98. And yeah, he gave me an avoidance start, as they do with those sort of things. But so I struggled on for another 6 months, and then I virtually went out on a stretcher in the end in summer of 98. And it was something about, if I just stayed with cooking and doing things and not trying to lead retreats, but we were down to three in the retreat centre, so it was becoming problematic sharing. So I did last 4.5 years. I benefited so much from it. But think about living in a retreat centre, and I'll talk more about this at Brixton when I do a talk about right livelihood, is that it's not hunky-dory living in a retreat centre. You can't escape. You can work at the London Buddhist Centre. We used to have restaurants, we used to have cafes, we used to have food businesses. We used to have communities, there's a few of those still around. But you can leave a job and go home to your community or your flat. Retreat centre ain't no escape. You hear, you cannot, and that's the strongest right livelihood practice we've got. So whether it's women living at Tarloka or Tree Ratnaloka, or men living at Udrasna, or men living at Adistana or the mixed community there, there's no escape. If you might have a car, you can go out for the day, but it's full on all the time, 24 hours a day, day in, day out. Every other right livelihood we've got is totally different. I was talking to one of the guys at Wadrosna yesterday about this, because they can't find a third member still. And he said they've not had much interest. I said, I'm not surprised people do not want to live in retreat centres. They know that it's hard work and there's no escape, particularly from Wadrosna, because it's quite isolated. So, what else do I want to say? I've said about the Tunbridge Wells class. I think it's very important. There's another teaching of Sangharakshita, and that's about friendship. He's given many teaching about friendship, but I think Subhuti emphasised this. You can have lots and lots of friends and acquaintances, but what Subhuti said, you can only concentrate on six. I think that's a number he came out with. And I think if you do give your attention to six good friends, you can have other friends, but give your full attention. So Yinotra used to live with me here, and for 3 years came up from Brighton shortly after I did. He's become a very important man for me by living together. Karnavaja, who I was ordained with, came to live here when he was ill. So he's another good friend of mine. And a Bhayavaja lives at Vadrasana, a lot of you know. We were ordained together and were very, very close, male friendship. And Amoghavajra came here from the Mitra Convener from Glasgow. And just by giving that room up in the corner to him in his wheelchair, because he's been in a wheelchair for 30 years, he's got no sensation since he dived in the water in his teens. Nothing's worked down here. So he's been in a wheelchair for 30 years. In those days, you used to go up to the shrine room, that middle door, up two planks. It was crazy before that, when Brown was in. And he came into the main part through a bit of plywood up to the kitchen door. But out of that, those friendships, him coming down here, I concentrated on those friendships. I have got other people that have not. So I think that's a bit of advice I could give you in terms of the Brixton Sangha, where your friends are. Concentrate on your close friends, even if you do live in a retreat centre. What else can I say? I just keep on with the meditation. Use retreats to boost it and go on retreats in other places. Like, you'll have these, like Sarah's talking about, you can have these experiences where it comes back to you, like it came back to me last night. It goes into the body and it comes out. And that's what happened to me. And that's what I've been talking about, came out of a body memory in that shrine room last night. Okay. How long have I done?
Yep, longer. That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you, Rachel. Thanks very much, Rapa Shula. And I just wanted to clarify, I didn't say don't mention the Saltoka. I think you misunderstood me. And I think that was a great contribution, actually. When I mean, so many people have benefited from the, you know, it gave me confidence to do a solitary retreat, just having that here next to a retreat centre. And the ponds, those are some of the first ecological ponds. That was in the 90s, wasn't it? Yeah. So, and they just seem to be flourishing and developing, and it's a really great part of the centre. So let's just have a moment of silence to absorb that.